Purple Crow on CITR 101.9 FM.
Good morning, everyone. You are listening to CITR 101.9 FM. I'm Hannah.
And I'm Georgia.
And you're listening to Film Picnic.
We begin, as always, by acknowledging that Film Picnic is recorded on the ancestral lands of the Musqueam people. This land is referred to as unceded territory as it was not given up freely, and it continues to be home for the indigenous communities from which it is stolen.
It is with immense privilege that we talk into these microphones and share our stories, as stories have been shared for generations before us on this land. We hope that Film Picnic can be a space for shared accountability, knowledge sharing, and reconciliation. This always was and always will be Indigenous land.
Period. Today, we are joined by an award-winning Vancouver-based director who has built a reputation for creating character-driven films that portray complex female and non-binary protagonists. Our guest embraces a passion for telling stories that make people feel less alone, which resonates throughout their body of work. This accomplished filmmaker has participated in several prestigious programs, including the National Screen Institute, the Whistler Film Festival Talent Labs, and the Women in the Director's Chair Story and Leadership Program, and was awarded a creator mentorship from the Gina Davis Institute. Now their debut feature film, What Comes Next, is currently in the works in post-production. Yes? Tell me I'm right. You're nodding your head. Okay. Today we're here to discuss their latest project, Me and Her, which premieres at the Vancouver Short Film Festival on June 15th, 2025. We'll be there. A film that explores complex mother-daughter relationships and continues their commitment to centering stories around nuanced female experiences. Please welcome Alex Caulfield.
Hi. Thank you. That was such a lovely introduction.
Thank you so much for being here. We're so excited to have you. We bumped into you after your panel at Vancouver Queer Film Festival. It was our first festival that we attended together as Film Picnic.
Oh my God, yeah,
so
it was.
Yeah, it's a bit of a full circle moment
full circle.
To have you here on our picnic blanket.
Oh, yeah. I feel very honored. It's such a great setup. I tried to come like picnic vibes.
Yes, and you know what? You showed up and showed out.
With the linen, I know. Well, maybe we've said this before, but guys, it's really hot in here.
It is.
It's really hot in this room. Yeah. So linen's a good move.
To start off, please. I was wondering if you could expand on your mission to tell stories that make people feel less alone.
Yeah. I guess, I don't know. I think maybe a lot of filmmakers and artists will relate to this, but I was kind of a lonely kid. I struggled to find the place where I fit. And also, it was the 90s, and my parents were very busy, so I watched a lot of TV.
Same.
Like, a lot of TV.
What were you watching on TV?
We lived in Texas when I was little, and so I watched a lot of UPN, so, like, a lot of Fresh Prince of Bel-Air, a lot of Moesha. just honestly, anything that was on, I probably knew way too much about the whole Bill Clinton, Monica Lewinsky thing at, like, age five. That was terrifying to, looking back, I'm like, oh, dear, why did I know so much about that? I felt alone a lot as a little kid, and I found a lot of solace in television and in movies, and it made me feel like someone else out there understood what I was going through or maybe thought the same way I did, and I hope that my work can do that for someone else and just pay that forward.
That resonates with me deeply. I
remember there was another moment at the Vancouver Queer Film Festival last year where everyone, it was like a big audience, and everyone was kind of chiming in about the characters that they, like queer characters that they had identified with in TV and film. But even beyond queer identity, like, it feels so validating to see representation or see something in a piece of media that you're like, wow, that's me.
And also just a comforting escape.
Yeah. And it's nice to be able to, you're not being judged by the show that you're watching.
No.
And that was a very comforting thing for me when I was young. Yeah. A young, weird child.
Same. funny anecdote here? The first time I watched Fresh Prince, I was like immediately drawn. I was like, I love Carlton. And I was like, I need to try his dance move. And now sometimes I'll bust it out.
You do.
At a party.
You do, in fact.
Oh,
I can vouch from that. For that.
Yeah. Less on Fresh Prince, more on other things. Writer Michelle Addison has said that me and her is told from the mother's perspective, which is maybe less common in coming of age stories when it's more focused on the
child
person coming of age. Yeah, I don't know. Like, what drew you to directing a story that was kind of told from this other perspective?
Yeah, so I, when I shot it, I had a 7-year-old daughter. I now have an 8-year-old daughter. So being a birthing parent is something that has affected my life greatly over the past 8-9 years. And I also, I personally have the belief that there are many coming of ages in our lives. So we, you know, we come of age. Everyone thinks about maybe like when you're 15 and you're kind of figuring out how the world works, or like you're going off to university. But I keep getting older, and then I keep becoming a new version of myself because of the challenges that I'm facing. And so I like to think we're all coming of age, and that's something that plays a lot in my different pieces. And I just think that like a lot of women and femme people don't, like, the stories stop being told once you, it's like the rom-com to get married, or like something to have a baby, and then it's like
life's over.
Yes, so you stop existing after that point. When I think especially in filmmaking and in other creative pursuits, like, you're just starting to get good when you're in your 30s, and in your 40s, you're starting to get a handle on it.
I'm personally very excited to be in my 30s. I feel like I'll kind of know a little bit more about who I am and be able to move with more confidence.
Yeah. A very spooky phrase that just entered my mind is, it sounds like a parental puberty of sorts.
Interesting.
Ooh, yeah, I said it was spooky. I prefaced it with the fact that it was spooky. Well, yeah.
No, anyways, I love that. No, yeah, that's something I've said. So coming of age consistently.
And we are. And we are. Yeah. Actually, I'm just thinking, like, maybe for our listeners who are entirely unfamiliar with me and her, because we've done some research, but we know not everybody is aware. Like, can you just give us a little synopsis, a little
line of sorts?
Yeah. So Me and Her is a story about Ellen, who is a mother in her 40s. She is also a longtime recovering alcoholic who, you know, had made some choices in her past, had some bad things happen to her, especially as a teenager and someone in their early 20s. And now her daughter is becoming a teenager and wants to go to her first kind of no parents party. And this is bringing up a lot of things for Ellen and kind of triggering some memories she hasn't thought about in a long time. And so it's a short film that basically follows Ellen's coming to grips with this. And she eventually, I don't know how many people, maybe pause this if you're going to go see it and you don't want to be spoiled. But like, she does eventually let her daughter go to the party and then has to work through her feelings about that and realize that her daughter is a different person than she is. Mm. And the relationship's going to be different than the one she had with her mom.
So. Yeah.
Yeah.
Wow. I love that.
I was already excited, but now I'm sold.
Yeah. What was your experience like collaborating with Michelle on this project?
I love working with Michelle.
Michelle is the writer.
Michelle is the writer and the lead actor in the film. And
period.
Yeah. Amazing. And she and I met when I was directing a TV movie and she was acting in it. And I quite liked her at the time. And then we kept in touch. And maybe a year later, she sent me the script and said she really downplayed it and was like, oh, this is like the first like thing I've written. I don't know if it's any good. And then I read it and was like, oh my gosh, we have to make this, and we have to make this now.
The first thing she's written.
Yeah. I mean, I think, for a short film she's written, I don't know all the details. I think she wrote a play in college and things like that. And she's, you know, a very experienced actor and wonderfully creative person. And so, yeah, it was a really great collaboration. I haven't gotten to work that closely with a writer before. I've directed things I haven't written, but usually
the writers,
they're off somewhere
writing their
away.
Next piece.
So this was fun. And I was so happy she trusted me and trusted my vision and the way I saw things, which was great. But it was wonderful to have her, just like her wisdom there and her creativity there as well to work with.
I'm curious, were there any, because personally, as I really admire directors who direct other people's writing, because personally, my only experience directing is with my own writing. So when I'm writing it, I have a clear vision. I'm curious to know, working with the writer as the actor, were there any challenges there in, like, you know, your directorial vision versus what Michelle had maybe envisioned for a scene or a moment in particular?
I was so ready for there to be challenges, and then there weren't really, especially in production. We had discussed things. I think we had a very similar vision, and we had discussed things a lot in advance. And so, and she's also just such an experienced actor that, like, when she's on set, that's what she's doing.
Yeah.
And she's showing up. She knows the character so well. That was the thing that was really beautiful about it, because she wrote it. She really knew the character inside and out. And yeah, I think there was a little bit, and it wasn't even like bad tension, but like when we were doing the edit, like she and I also are producers on it. And so we're doing the edit, and it was funny. We actually, like, I cut something, and then she did a pass of it with our editor, and then I did another pass of it with our editor. And then, and we just were able to, like, each of us saw it differently. And I think by going in separately, we found different moments and different ways to bring things together, and it made the piece a lot stronger.
That's so interesting.
So yeah, there's a good creative tension, like a friction. Sometimes you need that in
it's important in to post. Have different perspectives.
Yeah.
I mean, I was gonna ask too, like, even just upon reading the script, were there certain moments, or I guess this also applies for, like, maybe scripts in general, when you're, especially projects that you haven't written, but like, Did you read the script and think that were there certain moments that stood out to you that you were very excited about, or that, like, really, had, like, an impact on you in a way that made you want to join the project?
Yeah, interestingly, something that I thought was really a great moment, and, like, this kind of moment of comedy, didn't actually make it into the final cut, because it just wasn't quite working. In the script, it worked great.
Oh, no. Yeah.
And so that was something that drew me to it.
Did you guys film it?
We did film it.
You did film it.
Yeah, we filmed it. And we just, when we were putting it in, we tried putting it in a few different spots. And it was part of the kind of, there's a montage-ish thing, a couple different scenes where she's waiting while her daughter's at the party. And, like, she's trying to pass time without, like, freaking out. And so there were a few, there was some funny stuff that it just didn't quite, it was like maybe a little too, it was too long or too not, just didn't quite fit with the pacing.
Yeah, sometimes it doesn't, like, push the story along in a way that you need it to. And it might be a great, great moment. I remember sitting in on a read through of a feature film, and one of the feedback was like, this script is so funny and there are so many great funny moments, but don't maybe get too attached to those moments that you love, because sometimes, even though it's great, it, like, doesn't, like you were saying, it doesn't fit quite well, or it doesn't do what it needs to in such a short period. It's hard when you have, 15 minutes?
I feel it. Yeah, it's 14 and a half minutes all in. So, it's pretty quick.
Tight window. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think, like, this, you know, there's a bit of a truism. It's probably been said a lot, but, like, you know, you write the script and then you kind of rewrite it when you're filming it, because and then you rewrite it again.
Yeah.
And you cut it. Yeah. And so it does have to be, you have to look at what you have and how that it becomes the best film that it can be.
Yeah.
I'm interested a lot in the kind of aspects of recovery and trauma that exist in this film. Hannah and I actually just had a really interesting conversation with the interim director of Doc, Maya Bastian.
We did.
On centering well-being in your production. She had a lot of really interesting thoughts on just, you know, like, her
somatic
practices
healing
for, like, maintaining kind of, like, emotional safety on sets. Yeah, I don't know. I guess, like, as a director, what was your approach to directing, like, emotionally complex material and handling those feelings?
Yeah, so even though this has finished first, I'd actually shot my feature film before I shot this short, and we just had a bit of a prolonged post-process, as indie films
classic.
Often do.
Yes.
Classic.
And so on my feature, I had worked with this wonderful intimacy coordinator. Yeah, and now Megan Gilron, her last name escaped me for a moment. Megan Gilron.
Shout out.
And she's wonderful. And so I asked her to come on to our short, and we didn't have a huge budget. So she actually also did our costumes for us, which was amazing.
Wow. Talented.
Yeah, just like she's a very, very talented person. Mm-hmm. And so Megan helped us both with choreographing some of the flashback scenes. There's also, you can see in the trailer, there's some shots where Michelle is reliving some memories while she's in the shower, and so that had some level of nudity in it, and and Megan really helped with that. And then she's also very trained in just managing, helping people manage their feelings and being available for when something might come up, and like mental health first aid and those kinds of things. So she did that both for my feature and then also on the short as well. And so I think that helped create a really safe space. And we had like a very, very queer, very trans, very like women-centric crew. Love. And I think that...
Let's talk about it.
Happy Pride, guys.
Happy
it's
Pride.
June.
Yes. My next question actually was, you know, given that it was a predominantly female, non-binary, trans crew, can you speak to the importance of representation, not just in front of the camera, but behind the camera as well?
Yeah, I do feel like, and it doesn't even, this was a majority, like, non-men crew, I guess, is like a simple way to put it. Non-cis men crew. But I don't even think it needs to be a majority for it to make a huge difference. Like when I've been on crews where I think it's probably about 30% is where the difference is made. Like if you, it's just people act better.
Better on better behavior.
Yeah, everyone's on a little bit better behavior. But I think there's, it's really great for a sense of community, and it helps, like, it does help foster safety and like an openness.
Yeah.
Especially in like really sensitive scenes, like some of the stuff we shot. And like, to be clear, all of the cis men on our show were amazing and sensitive and did a wonderful job.
Yeah,
they just weren't in the majority of the scene in this case.
Yeah. I think you can also kind of see that on screen when it's a safe environment, when people are enjoying themselves. I think the final product ends up being better quality.
Yeah. Well, I was gonna say how lovely that you also knew your costumes and intimacy coordinator from your feature, you know, prior to even coming on the set. Like,
yeah,
you know, having someone that you can feel safe with, but then it's like, oh, you already have this established relationship, and like, I imagine that would be helpful and kind.
Yes, it was really helpful, and I think intimacy coordinating is a tough job, and I think there's a lot of different ways to do it, and certain, you know, everyone's going to have their preference. But I think in working with Megan, like, as a person who understands both all the health and safety aspects of this and takes them very seriously, but they're also a person who understands story and character. And if there's, say, if, you know, the writer or the director has a vision of seeing it one way, and the actor is maybe feeling uncomfortable with the exact images that are maybe in the director's mind, then finding a way to, okay, what are we trying to establish with this? What are you trying to hit emotionally and story-wise? And then helping be creative and find a new way to still make sure the story is told properly, but in a way where everyone feels safe and respected.
Yeah, and also that's... They are experienced in, you know, directing and choreographing maybe more intimate scenes. So I think having an intimacy coordinator on set really helps with that and making it more authentic and, like you said, comfortable for the actors. And the more comfortable it is, the less maybe robotic or awkward it might appear on camera.
Yes, definitely. Yeah.
Continuing on the mental health subject, your character Ellen manages her anxieties through strict routines and control. How were you working with Michelle to portray this internal struggle in an authentic way on screen?
Yeah, I mean, I think all of that was there in the script when I read it. But it was also, it's just something I really relate to. I like, my life is pretty regimented in a lot of ways. And I've found ways that I can relax those routines around filmmaking, because you are working weird hours and variable hours, and things are changing all the time, but then also building in the recovery time for after that to make sure that then you take the time to rest and heal and get back on track in that way.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like we've spoken a lot about work-life balance, but I was just having a conversation yesterday with one of my friends that I'm like, I feel like life isn't a very, I work at a restaurant also, and a customer told me like, oh, happy Friday, happy weekend. And no. I was like, oh, you mean Thursday? And they were like, no, it's Friday.
Yeah, my agent.
And I just completely, I was like, I didn't know what day it was. Like, the regiment is, sometimes it can be so helpful. And then other times when I am able to abandon that a little bit, I think it is also really freeing. And yeah.
Yeah. No, that's just funny. My agent texted me this morning being like, happy, enjoy your Sunday off. And I was like, yeah.
Definitely off.
Is it off?
Definitely
off.
Oh.
Not us saying the same things at the same time.
All the time. Well, we kind of touched on this a little. I mean, you just mentioned work-life balance, but you have a feature in post-production and you have a short premiering.
Yeah.
How do you balance multiple projects at once?
At multiple stages,
I think it's funny because everything has like an ebb and flow to it, and that's really how it worked. I shot my feature. We did like a kind of first director's cut of it. And then we were like, okay, we're going to get some more funding. So we're going to take a pause on this. And then in the pause, Michelle's an amazing producer, and we raised the money for the production very quickly. And so over the course of like 6 months, we had basically raised the money, shot it. And then during the summer, we did our post-production. And that's, again, you know, it's a few days in the edit suite here and there. It's, you know, sending it off to the colorist and the composer and then doing back and forth, like, feedback on things. And then we did a little bit of ADR and sound mixing in person. But especially with a short, a lot of it is send away and then come back and notes and send away. And notes, because people are helping you out and working off the side of their desk kind of thing. So
yeah. You have also participated in some different programs, like the National Screen Institute and Women in the Director's Chair. I'm curious how did those programs maybe contribute to this ebb and flow that you're talking about, or just like maybe what was the most salient kind of skills that you took away from those experiences?
I'm so interested in women in the director's chair.
Yeah.
The story, so I haven't done the career advancement module, so I can't speak to that. But the story and leadership program was really amazing for, I was developing my feature in it. And so we did a lot of work both on the, like, myself as a director and like skills building, but also characters, and just like there was wellness incorporated into it. Like, we did a lot of like somatic stuff and just like really interesting practices that I felt like really opened me up and prepared me to make my first feature in a way that I wasn't prepared to before. So that was a really wonderful program.
Was it like script workshopping and that kind of, like, what, in what way did you have, you know, the concept coming in? What stage were you at?
I had a script. Okay. I had a script coming in. There was a little bit of script feedback, but a lot of it was, you know, we did some work to understand our characters better and character types. It was like, sounds so weird, but it's like really holistic. And so
sound weird at all.
Yeah, it's just hard to point out like a very specific thing, but I'm like, oh, there were so many. And it was a few years ago now that I did it, and we did it online. I'm not sure how the program runs now.
Was it COVID era?
It was 2020, like December or November 2021 into 2022.
So things were still shifting back.
And it was right before, after I'd finished the program, it was shortly after that that we applied for telefilm funding for it. Yeah.
Was it, what funding stream was it?
Regional.
Okay.
There we go. Nice. Speaking to maybe some of our emerging filmmaker audience listeners, for programs like this in general, I would be curious to hear about what pushed you to apply for these programs. Maybe just like where in your career trajectory were you at that point in time, and how did like participating in those kind of catapult you forward or
So I would say the program I did at the National Screen Institute made the biggest difference in my career of any program that I've ever done. Mm. And part of that is it was the first program I ever really did. Mm. I had met, so I was a creator, it was for the Totally Television program, which they don't run anymore. But I was a creative producer attached to a sci-fi series that just amazing writer who's in LA now, Gemma Holdway, had written, and we had met on a short the year before.
It's always about meeting.
Really, yeah, in the shorts. Working with people is really how you get to know if you can keep working with
100%,
them,
100%, yeah.
And so we had met through that, and I mean, I always felt a little bit like I got kind of coattailed into it because it was such a brilliant script, and she was so much more experienced than I was at the time. And just as a result, I was in Toronto, I was learning so much, and everything was new to me, and I didn't have a foot in TV at all. And we ended up having the show optioned and with Lark, who's out here, and we, you know, worked with them for a long time, and then with COVID, and it was going to be like an expensive sci-fi show, and it was like women and non-binary creators who were newer, and like it was just like it was a really uphill push.
Yeah.
But that was where I learned the most. And then other programs, I would say the biggest thing I got out of them and why I think these types of programs are super useful, it's not necessarily solely the things you learn, because there are so many places to learn, but it is the community you build out of it, the people you meet through the different programs, the other writer, director, producer, filmmakers that you meet, the mentors you meet, and the like the introductions you get, because a lot of them, a component of it is having roundtable discussions with people from telefilm, or they set up meetings with different production companies for you and that kind of thing. And it's a little bit of a check mark beside your name, like, oh, this person is legitimate. And so I think that is the big benefit. But also, if you are going to do this, know that all it is doing is opening a door, and you still have to walk through it, and you still have
it's still what you do with the program.
Yeah.
How long was the program?
The National Screen Institute?
Yeah.
We went out, it was like in multiple parts. So we went out to Toronto once in the fall. There were three different projects. Then we had to do some further development, resubmit it. And then there were two projects. One of them got like eliminated, which is like a weird thing to do. It was also it was a very good project as well. But we came back to Toronto, did some more pitching practice, and went out and met a bunch of production companies out there. And then the third part of it was they funded us to go to Banff, which was amazing because it is very, very expensive to go there. And we also got, the other thing that was great about that program that I almost forgot was they gave us a bunch of development money, not like a huge amount, but they gave us
money
that
we could,
any money is amazing. Yes. And we used it, you know, we used it to go, part of it was like, we went down to LA and we met people there, and it was like, we were able to use the money to pay for our flights and to help us cover the cost of our hotels and like meetings and things. And it's just, all those barriers, it really broke down a lot of those barriers.
That's helpful. I mean, even I started my master's program this week, which is crazy. But I can already tell it is the connections that you make, the people that you meet throughout the program. And I think with a lot of, I mean, any film school, any program you're really in, it is, you kind of get out of it what you put into it, right? Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. Should we take a quick break before
Let's take a little break before we continue. I know, I have so many questions.
We will be right back.
Are you looking to decolonize your self-care routine? Take a trip down to Sisters Sage for a variety of handmade soaps, bath fizzies, smudge sprays, and salves infused with traditional plant medicines. Sisters Sage is an award-winning local indigenous business run by Tsimshian and entrepreneur, activist, and community builder Lynn Marie Angus and her dog TJ. Passionate about crafting wellness products that are respectful of the land we live on, Sisters Sage is committed to a heart-centered approach to self-care as well as our collective healing. Located on 1312 Kingsway, you can drop by from Monday to Saturday from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. See you there!
TransCare BC works to enhance the coordination of trans health services across the province and offer expanded health services to support transgender communities. They are doing this by developing gender-affirming client-centered models of service, ensuring access to gender-affirming and supportive healthcare that is equitable and available, and supporting network development to make sure trans and gender-diverse individuals, their families, and healthcare providers have access to information, resources, and support. Check out phsa.ca to learn more about this program and lend your voice to help create an inclusive and supportive system for trans members of our community.
We are UBC Electronica, and we love electronic music such as Run for them life when I step into the jungle. We offer DJ workshops, open decks, pop-up parties, and more. Follow our socials such as Instagram, Discord, or join us through email ubcelectronica@gmail.com.
Hello, friends. You're listening to CITR 101.9 FM Vancouver. I'm Georgia.
And I'm Hannah.
And you're listening to Film Picnic. We are here with our lovely guest, Alex Caulfield.
Yay!
Yay, back! let's dive right in.
Yes.
Let's do it.
I'm just curious how you balance this kind of crazy world of being a creative in the film industry, in any kind of creative field, really. And being a parent.
Yeah, I think it's tricky, and I do want to find the right balance because I don't want people to feel like it's impossible, and
yeah.
I also don't want people to feel like it's easy.
Yeah.
But it is, like, it's something you have to choose actively, I think, or else you're gonna be really resentful and frustrated. Yeah, I mean, I sort of joke that, like, the biggest skill I learned from being a parent is how to be depressed for like 6 hours a day and then stop.
Yeah.
And then come back to it again tomorrow. Speaking of mental health challenges.
Yeah.
But it also, it kind of works for, you know, if you're a writer or if you're developing projects, like being able to segment your time is important.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing I found was that it helped me figure out my priorities a lot more because you just don't have time for all of the, I'm trying to find a polite word for it, but all of the like...
BS?
Yes. Yes, all of the BS that we love to like kind of swirl around in and mope and be like, oh, I don't know what to do. This is so hard. This is so confusing. And then when, especially when you have a baby and they need you all the time and you have a toddler who's doing interesting things and you want to be a part of their life, when you have a kid who's doing all sorts of cool sports and you like watching them, it's, you very quickly figure out what actually matters and what is stuff that you can let go and what doesn't matter. And it lowers your tolerance for people who don't respect your boundaries, and it's just, it has made me a much better, more effective person.
Yeah.
But it is still, it's a lot of work. My spouse and co-parent is like also in the film industry.
Right.
They work in props in the union, and so in a way that's been helpful because financially we've been able to like lean on that.
Yeah.
And then, which has given me a bit more time to be selective about the types of projects I'm doing. And it's also allowed me to be around and do stuff like go on field trips and just be present when I can.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's the key. Be present with what you're doing when you're doing it. And that's something I still struggle with, where it's like, you can end up being swirling about work while you're trying to take care of your child.
Yeah.
And then you can be feeling guilty for not being with your kid while you're at work, when your energy would be much better spent being focused on your kid when you're with your kid and focused on what you're doing at work when you're doing
it.
Yes. Yeah.
Was your... Oh, sorry.
No. I was just thinking, I was watching a Shonda Rhimes speech one day, and she was talking about how, you know, people always ask her how she does it, how she's, you know, a mother and does all of these things, and she's like, to be honest, you don't do it all at once. You know, when I'm at work, I'm at work, but I'm thinking about my kids, and when I'm at home, I'm with my kids, but maybe I'm thinking about work.
Very much on the same subject with me and her being a mother-daughter story. I know we talked about this a little bit before the episode started, but it was just such an interesting conversation. Like, do you feel like you see a little bit of yourself or
you know, I guess maybe it was like your own mother-daughter relationship coming into your mind while you were working on this project, and or like, how did you negotiate those feelings if they did come up?
Yeah, so my daughter is only 8, so she hasn't quite hit that teenager stage yet. Not quite yet, but I, you know, I have my own mother-daughter relationship to drive on. I was like, not the easiest, I think, around that
I
age.
Absolutely was not.
Right? Well, I definitely wasn't.
I say, Mom, I love you. I'm sorry.
Right? Yeah. I feel like 14-year-old girls.
Oh, my goodness.
People being raised as girls, it's like very, it's a lot.
It's a hellish time.
It's very hard to get through. So I, you know, I had a lot of that to draw on. Mm. And I think I've also always been really fascinated with intergenerational trauma, but also just like intergenerational change, like the epigenetics basically of it, what we pass down to our children, what has been passed down to us through parental behavior, through the ways that we were treated, the things we were exposed to, and how sometimes maybe our parents trying to hide certain aspects of themselves from us to make us better might actually end up pushing us in like a similar direction and making some of the same mistakes. And I think that's always interesting, that legacy.
Yeah,
it is very, there's so much to say about mother-daughter dynamics. Like, oh my goodness. I think in third year, almost every script that was pitched was some sort of mother-daughter story.
Because it's real. Yeah. It's real.
There's so much in that.
For audiences that are going to be watching Me and Her, what do you hope, maybe particularly you audience, particularly like mothers and teenagers in the audience, like what do you, for people who might see themselves in the characters in your film, what do you hope that they take away from watching it?
I hope that for any teenage girls that are watching it, that you, like, it helps you have a little bit more empathy for your mom, help you have a little bit more empathy for your parents. It's hard to see them as full people, and I think that's one of the biggest coming of ages that happens, is when we start to see our parents as full humans who are flawed just like we are and have hopes and dreams and things they're scared of. So maybe it can help a little bit with that. And I think for moms and parents out there trying to remember what it was like to be that kid and just being empathetic, hopefully they can have more care and relate to each other a little better.
I think maybe seeing a film like that would have been helpful for my mother and I. We needed to go to like a mother-daughter movie night to
I remember watching Lady Bird and being like, oh, that's spot on.
Man.
The car scene in the just the very beginning, I was like, I feel like I've had that conversation.
That's also just, what a beautiful, brilliant feminine writing.
I know.
Greta Gerwig.
Yeah. Shout out,
queen.
You mentioned growing up in Texas.
A little bit, in my youth.
When did you come to Vancouver? What did you start your filmmaking career in Vancouver?
Oh, yes, very much. So I was I was like a kid when I was down there. I was born in Vancouver.
Okay.
And then my dad went back to school when I was a kid.
That's really interesting, actually.
Which I always credit with seeing my dad in his 30s go back to school, and he went to Texas Chiropractic College in Houston, and so we all moved down there, and you know, he became a fully licensed chiropractor in his early 40s.
Cool.
And so I just always saw that, like, you can reinvent yourself and you can try something new, and there's never it's never too late to go after what you're passionate about and what's important to you. And that's something I really internalized young, and I'm very grateful for that. But so we lived there until I was my daughter's age, and it's the same age she is now. And then we moved back up to Canada, and we moved around a little bit and kind of settled out in South Surrey. So I've spent the majority of my life in Vancouver and Lower Mainland.
I know. Mean Her was filmed in Vancouver.
Yes.
Yeah. How does, like, just being in your home base, like, I don't know, does that influence your filming at all, or does it provide some kind of comfort and feeling or influence on your work?
Yeah, and I think so. We shot in Dunbar area.
Hey, we live there.
Which is, you know, that's where Michelle like lives and where she grew up. And she's just a little bit older than me. But when she talks about her youth and what it was like when she was growing up, it really reminds me of like South Surrey, White Rock, like kind of similar demographics and like. I know it's changed a lot out there and it's not quite so isolated as it was when I was growing up, but it's, yeah. So it was able to bring back a lot of the teenage stuff for me. And yeah, I really
like
Dunbar
Theater also. Oh, so good. Dunbar Theater. Go see a movie. I have independent theaters.
Maybe I
independent
shouldn't say
cinemas,
that, but yeah.
Important. Yeah. Yeah, that's beautiful. Where in Dunbar, am I allowed to ask like where you guys were filming or was it like house locations?
Yeah, it was so we actually mostly shot in this one house and we like made the basement into like several different locations.
Awesome. I love that.
Amazing.
And then the scene at the end in the parking lot, we stole like, you know, where like Oak and Broadway is, you know, how there's like the Scotiabank there. We went there after everything was closed and just like shot that scene with the scene in the background.
Yeah.
So
nice.
They can't stop us now.
Yeah, man. Okay. Guerrilla filmmaking.
That's how you have to do it.
Yeah.
Questions to start to wrap us up,
yes,
maybe?
Yes, please.
I think you're about to ask the same thing that I was, but for aspiring filmmakers, maybe queer or with queer or underrepresented voices, what advice might you have for them based on your own filmmaking journey?
I think learn from my mistakes and like don't try and do everything yourself and don't assume that you're so different. Don't assume that there aren't people out there who get you. And build that community, because that is really, that's what you need to get through making a film, and that's also what you need to get through life.
Yeah.
I think is a strong community around you. Build that
huge,
community early on.
Huge.
And just
this
keep
is
doing it.
Everything we talk about on our show. It's
every day.
Just building
every
community. Yes. Picnic with others.
Yes, truly. And we are at the picnic.
Yeah.
Period. I just have a fun, like, silly question. What stories might you be excited to tell in the future? Are you already cooking up other ideas, or, you know, are you?
Oh, I'm cooking up. Yes. I'm cooking up a few different ideas. There's one right now I'm really interested in that is very focused on friendship and
love,
kind of the depths of friendships and how when a friendship ends, like the hole it leaves, and how we don't have
a structure to understand that type of friendship breakups.
Yeah, and so that's something that's kind of at the core of a project I'm developing right now.
That's beautiful. I also think, I mean, this is not what you're talking about, but like queer friendships.
Mm-hmm.
The depths of those and the understandings and the different kinds of love in those relationships.
Yeah.
Really beautiful.
We've talked about the different kinds of love.
We have.
Yeah.
Extensively.
Anyway,
on this show or in our personal life?
Maybe both. I don't know. I think there's always something mildly fruity in our episodes.
Anyway.
Talking about their love. Thank you so much for joining us today, Alex.
Thank you for having me.
It's been such a joy.
It has been such a joy. I'm so excited to witness like the premiere in Full Throttle on the 15th. I think it's gonna be amazing and really exciting.
Yeah. I'm really excited to have it screened
is
locally.
The whole team gonna be there?
I hope so. I know a lot of people are. I'm really hoping we can get pretty much everyone out. So.
Yeah. That would be so amazing.
At SFU
downtown at
the Center for the Arts.
Yes.
Gold Corp,
yeah,
I think
guys.
Is what it's called.
Okay,
I'm gonna have to double check that. SFU, if you're watching this, I'm really sorry. I know the name of your building, and I'll figure it out.
It's okay if you know.
Yeah, I think it's the David Mofagian Cinema at SFU, at the Gold Corp Center for the Arts at SFU downtown.
Shout out.
Beautiful. Amazing.
Yeah. Last question. Is there anything you just want to plug? Anything you want to... Mm-hmm. Do you have a website? Do you have, you know, socials? Anything you want to...
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I'm basically only on Instagram now because I'm trying to be on the internet a little bit less. It's making me happier. That's another tip. Stay off the internet a little bit.
Yes.
I'm at ARC Directs on Instagram. That's also arcdirects.com is my website. You can chat with me there. happy to, yeah, always happy to talk to up and coming like filmmakers and people who are looking to grow their careers. So anytime.
Awesome. That's so kind.
Thank you so much for being
Thank
here, Alex.
Thank you so much, Alex.
Thanks
this
for
is lovely.
Me.
What a lovely beginning to the day.
Yes, what a lovely beginning.
Beginning.
Listeners, please enjoy the rest of your day and don't forget to check us out at FLM Picnic on Instagram, or you can find our recordings for all of our episodes online at the CITR website or on Spotify. Or YouTube.
Or
at
YouTube.
Film Picnic.
So many places to listen and watch.
Yep. We'll see you next time on Film Picnic as we continue to explore
the Canadian film industry
one picnic at a time.
Oh, I knew you were going to do the new one. I was ready for it. Wait, you...
CITR 101.9.
CITR 101.9 FM.
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 CITR, Voices of UBC.
This is Alex Runyons. My new album, Above the Clouds and On the Ground, encompasses everything I love about making music. I'm passionate about digging into the experiences of life and creating something with intention.
The noise that we call music, but your parents just call noise. This is Rupert Lally, and you are listening to University of British Columbia Radio, CITR FM 101.9 Vancouver, and on the web at citr.ca.